The Hippies Who Meant It, a novel about young Americans and Canadians who went back to the land and homesteaded in Nova Scotia during the 60s and 70s. Written and read by Seymour Hamilton. Chapter 1. March and Countermarch. It was a spring afternoon halfway through the 60s in a modest town in upstate Vermont. Dappled sunlight fell through the tender green leaves of the trees around the central square. A stone church on the west side faced a brick courthouse on the east. In the middle was a bronze statue of a general on horseback, surrounded by fresh-mowed grass, on which a crowd of young people waved banners, chanted, and danced. Sweet-smelling smoke perfumed the air. Passers-by, conservatively dressed for work, school, and shopping, looked askance at long hair, beards, beads, bell-bottomed jeans, colorful T-shirts, and signs using words they never read in the newspapers. Dick Matthews stood in front of the church and watched people of his own age demonstrate against a war he did not have to fight. He was a Royal Military College cadet who was out of uniform, absent without leave, and at large in a foreign country. Dick was more than 6 feet tall, muscular, and curiously bland of expression under his short-cropped fair hair. The first days of spring sun had burned his nose, and though he wore blue jeans as faded as those of the marchers, he was different from them by more than just a few inches of hair. Where they moved with a casual, loose-limbed grace, hours of parade square drill had stiffened the way he moved and stood. Joe Franciosi waved a burning stars and stripes below the bronze feet of the general's horse. His jeans were blue-white, his jacket was patched, and he wore a T-shirt that read, "War Sucks." Long, limp hair framed his sunken cheeks. He had intended to be nowhere in sight when the demonstration against the Vietnam War reached its flag-burning climax, but he had muffed his escaped route and timing, because, against all his expectations, he'd been swept up by the moment and had become the firebrand he had intended to scorn. A detachment of militiamen summoned by the chief of the town's 6 policemen tramped into the square and crashed to a halt. The protesters lay down in front of their booted feet. An officer shouted, deploying his men in baton-wielding pairs. Even though they were not careful of toes and fingers, the young people did not flinch. A little reedily at first, but gathering strength as more and more joined in, they chanted, "Hell no, we won't go," and then segued into, "We shall overcome." The effect on the cadet and the flag burner was identical. Their throats tightened and their eyes filled with tears. The stars and stripes in Joe's hand dripped fire and plumed smoke, causing the captain of the militia to single him out for personal attention. Incensed by the desecration of his country's flag and infuriated by the shouts of the peace marchers, the officer hurdled the prone protesters, felled the bony young man with an expert thumb thrust below the left ear, and, when a blonde girl tried to intervene, smacked her aside. Joe lay with the burning flag on his chest as the captain kicked at him in a frenzy of vengeful patriotism. Dick was overcome by a quixotic need to become the instrument of divine justice. He vaulted over the demonstrators with as little forethought as the captain, who turned just in time to receive the heel of a hand in the nose. The soldier fell across the smouldering flag, bleeding copiously. Dick stood alone, surrounded by the bodies of passively resisting young men and women, eyed by approximately 40 militiamen who had just seen him dispatch their leader. There was nowhere to go, and it was much too late to lie down and go limp, even if he had wanted to. The militiamen dragged off the protesters to paddy wagons with kicks and arm twisting, as their martial spirits, cheated of a fight, turned to mean-spirited sadism. The circle of bodies around the romantic hero grew smaller. Police sirens.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?